funny and thought-provoking, and at the same time, slightly controversial. We all have people who we know who we might categorize as an adversary at best, maybe an enemy at worst, people who have wronged us, either on the personal level, the communal level, most certainly on the national level. As a people, the Jewish people can certainly think of a person or two, not only in present history, but throughout history, who have wronged us. And the question that, and obviously it's only natural to ask God under these circumstances to take care of the enemies that that we face. And when God willing, answers our prayers, the question presents itself: are we permitted to rejoice at the expense of our enemies? Are we permitted to rejoice when our enemies perish, when our enemies fall? And this question would seem to be not much of a question at all, because if we look at source number one on the page, source number one on the page is a straight-out pasuk from Mishlei, a verse from Proverbs, where Shlomo HaMelech writes, "Binafol oyivcha al tismach." When your enemy falls, do not rejoice. Uvikashlo aya gelibecha. When he stumbles, let your heart not exult. Why? Pen yireh Hashem v'ra ve'inav ve'heshiv me'alav apo.
It's a little shrill.
Shrill. I don't know what shrill means. How about if I speak without the microphone?
Oh. Try without the mic.
I prefer to speak without a microphone, but
I think you're loud enough.
Okay, how about now? All right. Should I start from the beginning, or did we hear everything up until this point? Okay. So Shlomo HaMelech tells us that there's a prohibition to rejoice at the downfall of our enemies. Why? And the reason that the pasuk gives is slightly cryptic. Pen yireh Hashem v'ra be'inav v'heshiv me'alav apo. Lest God see and be displeased and turn his wrath away from him. Obviously him, in that instance, is referring to the enemy. God will remove his wrath from the enemy and perhaps place it somewhere else. So while the reason given is certainly not 100% clear, because God will be unhappy, we don't really know what that means, that God will be unhappy. Why is he unhappy? That's something we'll have to uncover as we move forward. But suffice it to say, the verse is pretty clear that upon the downfall of our enemies, we should not rejoice. And that's something that God is not happy with. And if that were it, then the shiur would be over and we could all have a nice piece of cake and coffee, and that would be it. But unfortunately, that's not it. Because if we look at source number two, there's another pasuk in Mishlei, another verse where Shlomo HaMelech seems to say the exact opposite. In source number two, this is from the 11th chapter of Mishlei, "Bituv tzadikim ta'alotz kiriya," when it goes well with the righteous, "ta'alotz kiriya," the city rejoices, "uva'avod rishayim," and when the wicked perish, "rina," there is song. Rina from the word liranein, to sing. So here we see when the wicked, "uva'avod rishayim rina," when the wicked perish, there is song. Apparently, the perishing of the wicked is something to be happy about. And the question presents itself, obviously, when is it appropriate to be happy? When is it not appropriate to be happy? We have two verses here which seem to contradict one to the other. Sometimes it is appropriate, sometimes it's not appropriate. And the question that I'd like to discuss this evening is, when is it appropriate, when is it not appropriate? Why is it exactly that in certain situations it's not permitted to rejoice at the downfall of our enemies? How do we reconcile these two verses? And what exactly is the nature of the prohibition, "Binafol oyivcha al tismach"? Before we move any further, I'd just like to maybe pick everyone's brain here. Just after a cursory reading of the psukim, without even going any further, can anyone seem to come up with a distinction between these two psukim that maybe we could work with? Yeah. So explain to me why? Of course, obviously the answer we're going to give is that they're not contradictory. Why aren't they?
One is the recommendation of what you ought to do, and one is the statement of fact.
Okay, so one thing we could say is that Shlomo HaMelech, in one instance, perhaps in the latter instance, is just stating a fact that people are happy, but that doesn't necessarily mean that that's a good thing. Okay, perhaps.
First, in regards to somebody who actually is evil.
Okay, so that's another possible distinction. And I guess let's put them all out there. There are many distinctions to be drawn between these two verses. I'll just mention three. Just aside from the practical distinction, which could in fact be the case, I'll just mention three which arise from the text itself. One is that there's a difference between nefila and aveda. Benefol and ba'avod are two different verbs. Ba'avod rishayim rina perhaps implies that when our enemies perish, that means that they're gone. They have ceased to exist, either literally or figuratively. Either they're dead or they're no longer a threat. Whatever the case may be, our enemies have perished. Perhaps that is a cause for celebration. Benefol, what does nofel mean? To fall. Obviously, they have fallen, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they can't get up. Benefol evchal tismach, perhaps don't be so happy because it's presumptuous to be happy because perhaps it's not a final decree. Maybe they might get back up. That's distinction number one. Distinction number two is there's a difference between a rasha and an oyev. Uba'avod rishaim rina is telling us that when an evil person, an objectively no questions asked, 100% evil person perishes, someone who everyone would no doubt categorize as an evil person, as a rasha, that person perhaps is cause for celebration when they perish. But an oyev is an enemy, someone who, again, and another distinction to be drawn, but it's along the same lines, one is talking in the second person, oyivcha, benefol oyivcha al tismach, a personal adversary, perhaps someone who has wronged you in a personal way, but wouldn't necessarily be categorized as an objectively bad person. That's not someone whose downfall is worth rejoicing for, because we don't know necessarily that they're a bad person. And finally, a third distinction from the Psukim, which is less concrete and one which I can't quite explain, but is a distinction nonetheless, is the difference between Simcha and Rina. Again, those are two terms which are very often intertwined and sort of interchanged one with the other, but they are two different words and perhaps mean two different things. Again, another cause for reflection, perhaps there could be differences there as well. So, aside from the textual differences, and again, those do exist as we just noted, the question we should be asking is, when is it appropriate and when is it not appropriate? Those distinctions which we just drew perhaps serving as a foil, as a springboard, when exactly is it appropriate, when is it not appropriate to rejoice at the downfall of our enemies, which is the discussion which we'll have in the time this evening. If we move on to source number three, it's actually interesting that source number three on our source sheet is a Mishnah from Pirkei Avos. And in this Mishnah on Pirkei Avos, it's actually very interesting that it's the only source on the page that I didn't provide a translation for. Can anyone tell me why? Because it's number one all over again. Shmuel HaKatan Omer. Shmuel HaKatan says, B'nefolo yivchal tismachu v'kashlo aya gelibecha. And if I didn't know any better, I would say this is the first case of plagiarism that's ever been documented. You have the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, where Shmuel HaKatan literally just, and the Mishnah says, Shmuel HaKatan Omer. Shmuel HaKatan says, this saying was attributed to Shmuel HaKatan, and he literally quotes a verse straight out from Mishlei. So why is this attribution given to Shmuel HaKatan, if he's just quoting a verse? So all of the Mefarshim explain here and in other places in Pirkei Avos as well that in general, when someone says something in Pirkei Avos, it's known to be just something that this person would always say, something that they stood for, something that was always on the tip of their tongue. And if you look at source number four, the Rambam in his Perush HaMishnayos and his commentary on this Mishnah, says exactly that. Even though King Shlomo, we know, is the one who actually uttered this saying and gave this directive in Sefer Mishlei, aval hachacham hazeh, this scholar, namely Shmuel HaKatan, haya mechanech bezos hamida, he would educate the people with respect to this character trait, umazhir mizos ha'avira, and warn people regarding this transgression to not rejoice at the downfall of their enemies. So Shmuel HaKatan, even though he wasn't the author of the saying, it was something that he liked to say, something that he cared very deeply about, something that he would go around and whoever he would meet, he would make sure to warn them and to teach them, "Benefolo yivcha al tismach." It may seem like a tangential point as of now, but let's keep in mind who exactly is the person who's teaching this very important lesson, and perhaps it will become relevant as we move forward. Shmuel HaKatan is the one who would always go around saying, "Benefolo yivcha al tismach." So just to return to our initial question, and that being, why is it exactly inappropriate? Why is it inappropriate to rejoice at the downfall of our enemies? There are two explicit reasons given in some of the commentaries that I'd like to raise this evening. Those are sources 5 and 6. Source 5 comes from Rabbi Avadya Mibartanura in his commentary on Pirkei Avos. Right there where Shmuel HaKatan says what he says, explains the Bartanura, Pen Yireh Hashem V'Rab Einav. Again, as we noted, the verse itself gives a reason, but it doesn't really explain what that means. God will be unhappy if you rejoice at the downfall of your enemies. Why is God unhappy? What have you done wrong? Explains the Bartanura, She'asiyaso bilvavcha ki'ilu hu shluchacha l'malos ta'avascha. That if you rejoice when your enemy falls, you are making it, you are giving off the impression that God was acting as your messenger to carry out your desires. This person was your enemy, this person was your adversary, this is someone who you wanted to see taken care of, and in fact you probably asked God for it and God took care of it. To rejoice is almost, it's presumptuous and arrogant to assume that God is your shaliach, your messenger, lemalos tavascha, to fulfill your wishes. God is not in the wish fulfilling business. God is not a genie. He doesn't do things because we wish it. And God does things because the world is to be governed in a certain way, not, God forbid, to negate in any way the koach hatfila. People have the potential to and the opportunity to daven for things. That certainly is the case, but never to presume that it was our tefillah and that was our wish and that was our and it was our desire that caused God to enact the justice that He did. So, from a very simple perspective, says the Bartanura, we don't want to be so haughty and such a baal gaiva, I guess, for lack of a better term, to assume that it was us and no one else or nothing else that caused God to enact the justice that He did. B'nefolo yivchal tismach, God should not be made out to be the messenger for our wishes. So that's reason number one offered as to why b'nefolo yivchal tismach. Reason number two is offered by the Ralbag. And this reason, at face value, certainly seems difficult. Let's just read it inside before we discuss it. The Ralbag explains, Pen Yireh Hashem, Roa Tchunatcha Bezeh HaInyan. God will see your bad character traits in this particular area. V'yashiv me'al oivecha apo, v'yashivehu alecha mipnei Roa Tchunatcha. And God will obviously remove His wrath, His anger from this individual, your enemy, and place it upon you. Why? Why is it bad? Ki ein ra'ui shi'ismach bara. Because it's not appropriate to be happy in the face of evil. Ki Hashem yisparach hirchik mitziyuso lefima she'efshar umashi yagia yagia b'mikre. Explains the Ralbag that God distanced Himself from this world and made it appear as if everything that happens by chance to the best of His ability, and we shouldn't treat it otherwise. One note. This is very much symptomatic of the Ralbag's general approach to hashkacha, to divine providence. The Ralbag has a pretty slightly controversial, but not certainly out of the realm of possibility approach to hashkacha, and that is that there is to a certain extent no such thing as hashkacha pratis. God only observes things and influences things on a general communal level. Hashkacha klalis. But in terms of me, God isn't influencing whether I, you know, or He doesn't impact whether I lift this paper or raise my hand or anything on an individual level, which happens. This is the Ralbag's view, and perhaps that's why he says what he says. God, b'nefolo yivcha al tismach. Again, this is talking on a singular level. If your enemy perishes, so that's not a cause for celebration because it wasn't necessarily an act of God that was the cause for this result. Even if you didn't want to read it that way, and you didn't want to attribute this to the Ralbag's general philosophy, one could still read it that similar but slightly different to the Bartanura, and that is that God purposely gave off the impression that the reason why things happen in this world by chance, not every end result in this world is an act of miracle. Not everything that happens in this world is apparently in an open way, in an overt way, an act of God, and it was done so for a purpose. And again, if you rejoice at the downfall of your enemy, so it's sort of removing things from the realm of this world and sort of bringing it to another world, which was not the intention of God in the way the world works. Either way, it's certainly very interesting, very thought provoking that the Ralbag would say this. It's a very philosophical approach to Benafolei Yivchal Tismach, sort of removing it from the realm of the practical and more into the realm of the philosophical. The Ralbag obviously does not deny the basic principle of Schar V'Onesh, of reward and punishment, which almost everyone agrees is a basic tenet of Judaism. Even those that seek to limit the Rambam's list of 13 basic tenets of Jewish faith, most of those who limit that list still include Schar V'Onesh, reward and punishment, on that list. But suffice it to say, what the distinction is between Schar V'Onesh and Hashgacha Pratis is not a discussion for now. Yeah. So I think it certainly goes without saying that a private, more modest, perhaps internal satisfaction and happiness is probably permitted, either way. It's a natural emotional response that when you want something and God fulfills your response that you're happy about it. But that doesn't necessarily give me license to openly show my appreciation and to sort of publicize the fact that God has fulfilled my wishes. I think both the Bartanura and the Ralbag, certainly the Bartanura, maybe not as much the Ralbag, would say that that's okay. According to the Ralbag, again, happiness in general or giving thanks to God in general in these situations may be misguided because, again, according to the Ralbag's approach, Hashgacha Pratis is something which doesn't necessarily wasn't necessarily at play here. So that's the Bartanura and the Ralbag. Again, if we had more time, we can delve into the Ralbag's very fascinating approach of what Hashgacha means. There are what the pitfalls and what the benefits are to his approach. Again, it's certainly not mainstream nowadays, but there is he does go to great lengths to prove what he thinks and the benefits of such an approach as well. The credo of Benafolei Yivchal Tismach actually creeps into some normative cases as well. We actually do see it not only in the Gemara in very abstract cases, but Lamaisa as well, in practical cases also. If you look at source number 7, and source number 7 to a certain extent is the springboard for source number 8, but source number 7 is a very famous case that's quoted in the Gemara in Sanhedrin as well as other places as well. Be'osa Shah, at the exact time of Kriyas Yamsuf, the splitting of the sea, Bikshu Malachei Ashares Lomar Shira Lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The administering angels requested of God to sing Shira, to give praise to God for the miracle that he was performing. Amar Lahen HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what was God's response? Ma'asei Yadai Tovim Bayam Vatem Omrim Shira Lefanai. My creations, namely the Egyptians, are drowning at sea, and you want to sing praise? You want to sing praise before me? My creations are drowning at sea, and you want to sing praise? Immediately, this should evoke a very serious question in all of our minds. What is that question? Hallel. Certainly Hallel, but even more than Hallel. I heard someone whisper it. Az Yashir,
the action that drowned them.
God's action that drowned them is why he did that is a separate question. But the Jewish people themselves sang Shira upon the Kriyas Yamsuf. Right after it happened, you have the Jews standing on the banks of the river, and they open up in song. Az Yashir Moshe Bnei Yisrael Sashira Hazos. That song, in no way, shape, or form, is ever spoken about as something which was other than proper and appropriate. It was something which was desired by God, so much so that it actually found its way into our daily tefillos. Each and every morning, we say the Shira of Az Yashir in our davening. So, what's the distinction between the angels who wanted to sing at God's miracle and the Jews who also wanted to and were allowed to and were not chastised for singing at the same miracle that God performed? Any suggestions off the top of our head? Yeah. Okay, so the one answer, one answer, I think this is the simplest answer and the most straightforward, is that it wasn't a miracle which happened to the angels. It was a miracle which the Jewish people experienced, and that, to a certain extent, might be a cause for distinction between the two. But again, there are miracles throughout our history that even people for whom it didn't happen to are allowed to give praise as well. Yeah. For destroying the Egyptians. Another possible distinction, the destruction of the Egyptians versus the salvation and redemption of the Jewish people. That could be as well. I'd just like to point to one more, which I didn't see quoted anywhere, and I certainly can't prove. But there's an interesting, subtle diuk, very, very interesting language that's used in the Gemara and Sanhedrin that could perhaps be cause for God's response. What does it say? How did the angels approach God? What did they do? Bikshu malachei asharis lomar shira. They requested of God to sing. Perhaps the nature of shira, and if we had more time again, we would discuss the nature of shira and the different times that it appears throughout Tanakh. But shira, song, to a large degree, may be something that is only appropriate in a spontaneous and spur of the moment situation. The fact that the Malachim came to God and asked him, is it appropriate to sing now? No, they asked the Shaila. Is it appropriate to give praise now? There, God says, b'nefol lo yivchal tismach. But when it was a spontaneous reaction, which the Jews, not so spontaneous, as we'll see later, but the fact that it was a spontaneous reaction by the Jews, perhaps, was what warranted the Shira and was what made the Shira proper. It was something which was an emotional outpouring, which the Jewish people did. That could perhaps be a cause for distinction as well. Yeah?
Could it also be that humans are human and angels are on a higher madriga and Hashem expects more?
That could be. That certainly could be. But that wouldn't necessarily account for the desirability of the... In other words, if it were just, let's chalk it up to human deficiency, I don't know necessarily that Az Yashir would be the type of thing we would want to put in our tefillah. Humans have emotions that angels don't have. It could be. But if the proper thing to do in that specific moment would have been to, curb those emotions, then that, at least optimally, that could be what God would have expected from us. But he didn't. So it's hard to know whether that, in fact, is the case. Either way, that distinction certainly trickles down into the halacha as well. In source number 8, and this is a... source number 8 is a... is a citation, a passage from the Shibboleth Halakhet. But the truth of the matter is that you can find this source just about anywhere. It's a quote. It appears in the Beis Yosef. It's a quote from the Medrash Harninu. The Medrash Harninu is actually a work which we don't have. There's no sefer entitled the Medrash Harninu. This source is only found secondhand in many different sources, but it's always attributed in the name of the Medrash Harninu, which again we don't have. Which is very interesting. But the Medrash Harninu in Hilchos Sukkah says as follows: V'chein atamotze kol zayin yimei hachag anu gomer nesahalel, aval bePesach ein anu gomer nesahalel ela yom rishon ve'leila. The Medrash draws the distinction between Pesach and Sukkot. On Pesach, we only say halal on the first day, the complete halal. We only say the complete halal on the first day, but on Sukkot, we say the complete halal all 7 days of the holiday. Why the distinction? Explains the Medrash, The Lama, why is this the case? Shmuel ben Abba Amar, benefol o yivcha al tismach, because the Pasuk says that you should not rejoice at the downfall of your enemies. Shenitbu lefi shenitbu bo hamitzriyim, because the Egyptians perished on this day. That too, to a certain extent, is cause for at least a slight question, because we know that the halacha is that you don't say the full hallel every day except for the first day, when we know the Egyptians perished on which day? The seventh day, only the seventh day. So why is it that for the first 6 days of the holiday, at least, we don't say the full hallel, and not the, as opposed to the actual halacha, which is that we only say full hallel on the first day, and we stop saying after that. So to be sure, it's important to point out that there is another reason that Chazal offer as to why we don't say hallel for the duration of Pesach, which the Gemara and Erchin and Daf Yud quotes. We're not going to get into the specifics of that reason, but suffice it to say for now that that reason does explain why only the first day we say Hallel. But even if we were to subscribe to this answer, we could say that perhaps Chazal didn't want to give off the impression that Chol HaMoed in any way was more important than Yontif. Imagine the situation that all of Chol HaMoed we would say Hallel, and come Yontif, the last days of Pesach, and we would stop saying Hallel, the full Hallel. That was not something, that was not an impression or at least a perception that Chazal wanted to give, and therefore they instituted that all of Hallel wouldn't be said the entire duration, which certainly goes without saying that it shows the magnitude and the severity of this concern of Benefolo Yivcha Al Tismach in this particular instance. The only explicit time that Chazal actually addressed this contradiction of Binefolo Yivcha Al Tismach on the one hand, and Ba'avod Rishayim Rina, the contradiction which we raised at the outset, is in source number 9. And it, I think, is cause, at least the springboard for what might be something even more substantive. Kayotze B'davar At Omer, again, this is the Yalkut Shimoni in Parshas Kedoshim. The very tangential nature of the Medrash is apparent here, where this was not the initial topic, but the Medrash goes off on a tangent. Kayotze B'davar, you find a similar contradiction. Ata Omer B'nefolo Yivcha Al Tismach. It says in one place that you should not rejoice at the downfall of your enemies. Ulahalan hu omer, and later on it says, or earlier, ba'avod rishayim rina, that you should, there should be song at the perishing of your enemies. Ketzad yiskaimu shnei ksuvim ha'elu. How can we uphold both psukim? Talmud chacham shenitzchacha hayom b'halacha. If there was a Torah scholar who you were having a debate with, and he triumphed over you in this particular halachic matter, uba liyado dover lamachar, and tomorrow something befalls him, something happens to him, al tismachlo, don't be happy at this bad thing that has befallen this Talmud Chacham, pen yireh Hashem v'rabeinav, because God will see and be unhappy. However, im ra'isa adam mi Yisrael shehu rotze b'raso shel chaveiro, zehu rasha gamar. If, by chance, you see an individual who objectively, for no reason at all, wishes ill, wishes bad upon his fellow Jew, or even anyone for that matter, that is someone who is a Rasha Gomer. And that is the person for whom it would apply, Ba'avod Rishayim Rina. So again, I think what we were saying earlier, there's certainly grounds for that distinction. Someone who is your subjective adversary, that is a person who do not necessarily rejoice at their downfall. Someone who can objectively be categorized as a Rasha, someone who by all accounts, according to anyone you ask, is an evil person, someone who is rotze b'ra'aso shel chaveiro, even someone so severe that someone who just wishes ill upon their friend for no particular reason, that is someone who ba'avod rishayim rina. Obviously the question presents itself, why the pasuk of b'nefolo yivchal tismach, the subjective nature of the adversarial relationship, is applied to the Egyptians, who, again, obviously we're not God, and we can't know whether someone is objectively evil or subjectively evil. But it seems from the Medrash that the Medrash was willing, at least, to include the Egyptians under the category of Oyivcha, as opposed to the category of Rishaim. Perhaps that could be exactly the reason, to tell us that it's not for us, under any circumstance, to determine whether someone is an objective Russia or someone who is only a subjective Oyev, that is something that only God can determine. We find, and this gets back to the Ralbag and the Bar Tanura as well, we find many people nowadays, even some great Rabbanim, who feel the need to attribute certain things happening, like the, you know, the Holocaust, or, you know, Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans, or the tsunamis, or 9/11, or any of these horrible tragedies, to certain episodes, to certain episodes that are going on in the world. And that, to I think, is what Chazal are heeding a call against by saying that it's not our role, it's not our place to play God in any way. No one knows why things happen except for God, and it should remain that way. And as the Talmud teaches us, that our response to tragedy should be Yefashvesh b'masecha. Don't attribute these horrible tragedies to anything, but don't at the same time dismiss them. Use them as an opportunity to better yourself and to better your actions. Yefashvesh b'masecha should be our response to tragedy. That could be what the Medrash is teaching by perhaps saying b'nefolo yivchal tismach about individuals even as ruthless as the Egyptians. I mentioned earlier that it was Shmuel HaKatan in the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos who was the one who used to go around saying b'nefolo yivchal tismach. And the reason why I asked you to store that in the back of your brain is particularly because of source number 10. Because while there is very little we know about Shmuel HaKatan throughout the Talmud, there is one story that I think is relevant to us tonight. The Gemara tells us in Maseches Brachos that our rabbis got together to institute a set text for Shmona Esrei. What happened? Shimon HaPakuli histir Shmona Esrei Brachos lefnei Rabban Gamliel al HaSeder b'Yavne. Shimon HaPakuli got up, and Shimon HaPakuli ordered, composed, enacted, instituted a set text for davening, the 18 brachos of Shmona Esrei in this specific order, before Rabban Gamliel in the town of Yavne. Beautiful! We have our Shmona Esrei brachos, we have our 18 brachos of Shmona Esrei. Rabban Gamliel got up, he saw that there was something lacking. What did he say? Amar lehem Rabban Gamliel lechachamim, klum yesh adam sheyodeh latakein birkas haminim. Is there no one amongst us who knows how to, who is able to, who is willing to enact and compose and institute a bracha against the minim, the heretics, the evil people, the individuals to ask of whom we ask God to wipe out? Does anyone know how to? Is anyone willing to compose such a bracha? And who gets up and responds? Shmuel HaKatan. Amad Shmuel HaKatan v'tikna. Shmuel HaKatan got up and composed the bracha that we know today of as V'lamal Shinim Al Titikva. And it's undergone some variations over the years, but suffice it to say that it was Shmuel HaKatan who instituted this bracha, and it's certainly cause for question. I don't think it's an unanswerable question, simply because we're going to answer it in just a second. But the question is, the same Shmuel HaKatan who used to go around preaching the word, B'nefolo Yivchal Tismach, don't rejoice in the downfall of your enemies, is dafka him, it's specifically him who's the one who composes the bracha which requests from God that our enemies fall. It's a very interesting dialectic that Shmuel HaKatan draws, but I think we can all sense that that's exactly the point. It's that balance. Only someone like Shmuel HaKatan, who had on the tip of his tongue each and every day of his life b'nefolo yivchal tismach, only someone of his caliber and stature could be the one to compose the bracha of V'lamal Shinin, because either extreme is obviously deficient. You have people who, they'll note to you the enemies of Israel, and they'll daven each and every day in their davening that the enemies of Israel should fall and God should wipe out our enemies. And then when they do fall and God answers their prayers, they're standing on mountaintops thanking God for striking down the infidels and the evils and all the people who deserve to be killed. And that, of course, as we see from Shmuel HaKatan, is not the appropriate approach. Shmuel HaKatan was someone who understood the importance of and internalized the message of V'lamal Shinim Al Titikva, the importance of requesting of God that our enemies be taken care of, but at the same time being reserved enough and humble enough and modest enough to understand, when God exacts the justice that he feels is appropriate in this world, be humble enough to take a step back and be slightly more modest and reserved about it. It's that balance that Shmuel HaKatan was able to strike that we all should strive for. Only someone who can really internalize and appreciate the message of B'nefol lo yivchal tismach is someone who can say the bracha of V'lamal Shinim in the appropriate way. Shmuel HaKatan specifically was the one who was the appropriate one to institute that bracha. And I think that's something that we can all take away from, something that we could all take away from the whole issue of B'nefol lo yivchal tismach. I'd just like to conclude with one thought that I was very happy when I saw it in the name of the Chidah, because it was something which occurred to me as I was researching this topic. And I think, although not explicitly, it's something that the Chidah alludes to. The Chidah, and I saw it quoted in a tshuva of Rav Avadi Yosef, the Chidah says in the middle of the first line, the Hadam in source number 11, the Hadam Rinan, Maasei Adai Tovim Bayam Vatem Omrim Shira, that which God said when he admonished the angels for singing at the drowning of the Egyptians, Hani Mili Be'idna Derischa. That only applies when? At the time of God's anger. Be'osa Shash and Idonin, at the time that the judgment is being enacted. At that specific time. Aval Achar Shenigmar Hadin V'nigla Hanes Shari Lomar Shira. After all is said and done, after the judgment has already been enacted, after the miracle has already been performed, after everything is completed, then it's permissible to sing Shira. Let's go back again to the Gemara in Sanhedrin, which was source number 7. What are the first two words of the Gemara there? Ve'osa Shah. What does that mean? They didn't even wait till it was finished. They didn't even wait till everything was done. What they did was, in the middle of while everything was happening, while God was still in the midst of judgment, they got up and asked God to sing Shira. And God said, Maasei Yadai Tov Im Bayam. They are literally in the midst of drowning. And you already want to get up and sing Shira? How much more inappropriate can you get? However, the Jewish people did not respond that way. If you look at Oz Yashir, at the Shira of Oz Yashir, there's a few psukim, a few verses which are an introduction to Oz Yashir. And we say those in davening as well. What do we say? Vayosha Hashem bayomahu es Yisrael miyad Mitzrayim. God redeemed the Jewish people from the Egyptians. Vayar Yisrael es Mitzrayim meisas vasayam. The Jews saw the Egyptians dead at the banks of the river. Right then and there, the Shira should have started. Oz Yashir should have started. The Jewish people saw the Egyptians dead at the banks of the river. The miracle was over. But no. The Jewish people knew how to respond in that particular situation, and the psukim tell us how they responded. Because the psukim tell us more. Not just, Vayayi Yisrael es Mitzrayim meisas vasayam, but they put things in perspective. Vayar Yisrael es hayad hagdola asher asa Hashem b'Mitzrayim. The Jewish people saw the hand of God. They appreciated the miracle. Vayaminu b'Hashem v'Moshe avdo. They believed in God and in Moshe his servant. What they did, perhaps, was an appropriate response. They took a step back. They put things in perspective. They internalized and appreciated the miracle that God had performed. It wasn't just although Shira requires a certain amount of spontaneity, it wasn't a knee-jerk reaction whereby they climbed out of the battlefield and just automatically started singing. They were able to reflect for a moment and pause, not just Vayar Yisrael es Mitzrayim meis, but Vayar Yisrael es hayad hagdola asher asa Hashem b'Mitzrayim. They saw the hand of God in this particular situation. If we do find it appropriate in any given situation to rejoice at the downfall of an adversary, if God has hopefully answered our prayers and saved us from a particular threat, it's certainly inappropriate to rejoice without appreciating the very fact that it's an act of God. The Ralbag's approach notwithstanding, if we see and we understand and we appreciate and we can internalize the fact that it was God who was acting in this situation, the fact that God has answered our prayers, then perhaps Uva'avod Rasha'im Rina might be in effect. As opposed to B'nefol lo yivchal tismach, which is, might just be that knee-jerk reaction that Be'idna Derischa, where we don't pause for a moment and reflect. And in that spirit, benefolo yivchal tismach, although sometimes appropriate, may not necessarily always be the case. Sometimes perhaps it is appropriate. And in that spirit, in turn, may God always answer our prayers, and we should all have the opportunity to ask ourselves this question and to analyze and reflect upon whether it's appropriate to, in fact, be joyous because God will have answered our prayers in a meaningful and productive way. Thank you very much. Any questions? Okay. Back to Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda Chanelis. Sorry.
Yehuda's great. Thank you very much, Rabbi Block. We now, as I mentioned, for those of you who were here last week, have the opportunity of having that smorgasbord of various different Torah topics. Lots, again, very exciting topics. Should be very difficult. I hope that it will be very difficult for you to choose who to attend. In about a few minutes, we'll start, and we'll have the following topics. Rabbi Ephraim Glatt, who's in the back right corner over there. No horsing around. Are you permitted to ride on the king's horse? I'll be giving on trauma, God, and the religious psychology of suffering in the context of the book of Echar, Lamentations. My wife, Alyssa, who should be coming in a minute, will be giving on power and humility. Can they coexist? And Brandon Jerome, who is in the back, will be giving on dreams. Martin de Nilowitz, I always pronounced his last name wrong, I'm sorry, I apologize, will be giving on changes in time, changes in interpretation, a look at conversion. And Rabbi Block will also be giving on a comparison between Shabbat and the holidays. So lots of different things to choose from, all very exciting choices, and we'll begin in a few minutes. Yeah. We like to try to begin the share momentarily. Marv is scheduled for, I think, 9 o'clock or 9:15. 9 o'clock? 9:15? That's better.
Yeah. I'm on it. 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 Thank you. I'm Thank you. I'm
Yes.
Right, that's three, and then we're going to go out again, and we're going to go out, not the highest, Thank you. Thank you. awestruck today.
Maybe the speaker left.
Anybody leave a recorder?
Oh, thank you.
That was easy.
Good job.
Brandon.
And where are you living?
West Hempstead.
Like, you know, I don't know where anything is near. I'm like, okay.
Long Island?
Long Island. Yeah, sorry. I'm very keen.
I would like to say that before I came to New York, 5 years ago, I also thought that Lady Truth
in New York is
isn't that big fault? It's all the same time.
Well, I think of all of Canada.
Exactly.
Like, you have to know people from Montreal. Like, Toronto, Montreal.
Well, now you know how big Toronto is now, right?
Yeah.
Is this your first trip to Toronto?
For a good length of time.
Have you been here before, like, to visit or whatever?
Yeah, I can't trust.
You got both?
I only have one.
Hey, nice to meet you, Brandon.